Night's Hour of the Hour. It is the hour of the time. Lights out for the purposes of your body, soul, and mind.
I'm William Cooper, and you're listening once again to the Hour of the Time.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, sweetheart.
You're welcome.
Day this was, ladies and gentlemen. They came from all over the country, or should say they went. I wasn't there, and it didn't happen here. The Million Man Watching March in Washington, D.C., and yes, it was a watch, and I know that most of you did not get a chance to see it, and I didn't get a chance to see most of it myself, because I was busy with other matters, very important matters, I might add. The press once again discredited itself. There are no journalists left in this world. They said that they'd be lucky if 250,000 people showed up. Extremely sarcastic and derisive. Always touting Louis Farrakhan as being the divisive force in this country, well, all along, it was the press. Oh, and the jealousy from the black leaders and the NAACP and everybody else who didn't participate was overwhelming. They got what they deserved. They had a chance to all come together in something wonderful, and it was absolutely 100% wonderful. There's no doubt about that whatsoever. It was successful. 250,000, not on your life. Remember when Dr. Martin Luther King spoke on the Capitol steps in 1963? The park police said that there were only 400,000 people there at that time. Well, there wasn't, ladies and gentlemen. There were many, many more than that. The park police and the Washington, D.C. officials intentionally misquote the numbers so as not to encourage others to do the same thing. They were trying to tell us today that they didn't quite come up to the numbers of the march in 1963. Well, if you had a chance to view from one of the buildings where they had a camera on top of the roof, the number of people that were there, of course, you couldn't count. I couldn't count. But you see, I have a videotape library. There were more people there today than there were in 1963. That is clear. There's no doubt whatsoever. You compare the video footage, and it is absolutely clear that there were more people in Washington, D.C. today than there were to hear Dr. Martin Luther King in 1963. Nobody knows the actual number of people. But whatever the park police and the Washington, D.C. officials say, I can guarantee you that it was a lot more than that. If they claim that there were a little over 400,000 in 1963, and they're saying that there were not that many today in Washington, D.C., then I got some videotape footage that must have been shot on Mars. There were at least, ladies and gentlemen, 500,000 people in Washington, D.C. today, black men, who came together in a common bond for a common purpose. And it really didn't have anything to do with Louis Farrakhan other than he is the one who made it happen. You really want to know why Louis Farrakhan makes these people angry? I'm going to tell you right now. You see, I've been teaching you for the last 4 years what the New World Order is going to be. It's going to be a totalitarian, a socialist, one-world government. Now, I don't agree with everything that Louis Farrakhan says or does. His religion does not attract me, but it preaches good things to people, teaches them morals. Teaches them to obey the law, teaches them to have and keep together a family. All of those things I agree with. But you see, I don't have to agree with his religion, and neither do you, and neither does anyone else. Louis Farrakhan even had his militia there in Washington, D.C., and the press didn't say a word about his militia. You see, the Black Islamic Nation has a militia. So do a lot of other people. But you see, it's just not cool for socialists to criticize what they call minorities. Well, they certainly were not a minority in Washington, D.C. today. And I would venture to say that a good number of the black men there in Washington, D.C. today came directly from Washington, D.C. And I don't mean that disparagingly. I think the whole thing was great. I think it was great for black men, and I think it was great for America. Although I disagree with the policy that said that women could not attend and people from other races could not attend. I don't believe that it was divisive. They stated their purpose clearly, and I think it served that purpose very well. I was looking particularly at the faces of the men in the crowd. See, I never told you this before, folks, but when I lived in California, occasionally, not very often, but occasionally, I used to like to go to Disneyland just to sit on the bench and watch the faces of the people, and in particular, the children. And so when I got a chance to break away with what I was doing today, which quite frankly was working on the assignment of station chiefs and a few other things that need to be done and have been completed, I sat down and watched the faces of the men and the children in the crowd. I saw grown men crying. I saw not one single look of mean-spiritedness or animosity or ill will. I saw a lot of pensive, thoughtful moments. I witnessed for one fleeting moment something that just made my heart leap for joy, and that was a young black boy. He was either standing on something or sitting on the shoulder of someone else. I couldn't really tell. But his face was glowing. Glowing. Lit up. That I can't even describe. He was having the time of his life. He was realizing something, I know not what, and I'm not going to pretend that I do, because I don't. But I could see that he was realizing something about himself and his people that he had never realized before. That much was clear. And I wish that the cameras would have stayed upon that young man's face for more time. But as is always the case, they did not. I think a lot of black men suddenly realized, maybe for the first time in their life, that they are not alone. I think the purpose of bringing all of those people together to provide a sense of togetherness and institute a reflection upon what they're about or what they're doing, to bring responsibility into the black community, to clean up the neighborhoods, to bring the family together and keep them together and to provide for the children and their education, and to create business opportunities for entrepreneurs and businesses in the black community by black people, is a wonderful thing. People have often criticized me, saying, Bill, you know, if you're right and all this New World Order wants to get rid of all of these people, they think they're useless eaters, and you know, why did they do the civil rights things and all of that kind of stuff? Well, ladies and gentlemen, those of us who were around before those things were instituted saw a different black community. We saw different black families. We saw different black workers. And yes, discrimination did exist, and bad things were done to black people, and it was wrong, and it had to be corrected. But black people had communities then. And yes, many of them were poor, but they had families and they had fathers. The children went to schools and they learned something. They weren't hanging out on street corners, they weren't breaking windows, they weren't robbing people, and they weren't taking dope. And they weren't in prison. You see, when they discovered that they could not keep the black man down anymore, that he had had it, and that there were white people in this country that would stand up alongside the black man, they had to figure out another way to enslave the black race. And they did. Through drugs and welfare. It is a form of euphemistic enslavement, but slavery, nevertheless, is exactly what it is. They took away the pride and the dignity of the black worker, the black man, the black family. They degraded and destroyed the education of the black children. And yes, back then they did have a much better education than they do today. I attended junior high school in Monroney Junior High School in Midwest City, Oklahoma. It's one of the reasons why this Oklahoma bombing did not sit well with me. It wouldn't have sat well with me no matter what, but It was a personal thing. I know people there. I went to school with them. The first girl I ever fell in love with in my life lives in Oklahoma City. And it's none of your business who she is. And I remember that we used to go quite often. Representatives of our classes used to go, I should say, and I was one of those representatives, to the black high school in the black section of town because there everything was segregated then. We were children. We didn't know what was going on. We thought it was strange that all the black people lived together in one part of town. I was from a military family. And I got to tell you, quite frankly, the only time in my life while I was a child growing up that I ever heard the word nigger spoken by anyone was when my brother and his black friend got into an argument one day, and my brother called him a nigger. It's a word that he learned from his black friend, and they got into a fist fight about it, and they were friends ever after. And I never heard it after that until I went into the military service. But we used to go, the representatives of our classes used to go to this black high school, and those people were just as intelligent, if not more. They spoke English just as well as we did. They were concerned about community issues just as we were, and that's why we were there, talking about issues that concerned us all long before any of the civil rights stuff took place. Or actually, I shouldn't say long before it took place, but long before it became effective, let me put it that way. And that's really what I meant by that statement. It was going on before then. It was going full force at that time. But it was in no way effective. In fact, come to think of it, it wasn't going full force. This was 1957 I'm talking about. I'm getting a little confused here in my old age, folks. Bear with me. It was 1957. The civil rights things didn't occur until the 60s. But then we were, as children, going to black schools to try to solve problems that we all had in common. It had nothing to do with liberalism or anything else. It had to do with community. That's something I remember very well about Oklahoma. I don't know how it is now. I haven't been there in a long time. But if what happened with those people after the Oklahoma City bombing is any indication, nothing has changed. They still have that sense of community. Everybody in the world was attacking Louis Farrakhan today. They have been attacking Louis Farrakhan for a long time, and they will continue to attack him, ladies and gentlemen, because he has done what no one else has been able to do, and that is the secret of his success. No matter what he says when he gets up behind the podium, no matter what religion he believes in, no matter if he wants to segment off a section of the world and call it black land and take all the black people there, he will always be successful because he accomplishes what no one else wants to be accomplished. You see, if you take someone and make them dependent, and destroy the family by saying the woman can have a check, but only if the husband is not there, then the man will leave. The family is torn apart. The man goes off to sell drugs or something like that. And not all of them fit that category, I can assure you. And the woman has children and collects the welfare check. It is a form of slavery. drug addiction is a form of euphemistic slavery, which can be controlled to control others. When you have people addicted to a narcotic substance of any kind, I don't care what it is, even coffee. I've known people in my life who absolutely cannot do without a cup of coffee and will do anything after a certain period of time has elapsed without that cup of coffee in order to procure one. And you may say, well, that couldn't be. Coffee is not that addictive. Well, for some people it is. And some people will do literally anything to get their cup of coffee. Drugs are much worse, ladies and gentlemen. They are physically and mentally addictive, which means once you're addicted to this stuff, it doesn't do any good to go after you and prosecute you and put you in jail. All it does is fill up the jails, which is exactly what it's supposed to do. It fills up the jails and creates false statistics on crime that are used to scare you half to death, make you accept gun control legislation and draconian crime bills, used to be a crime bill would only be considered under the most unusual of circumstances after a long period of time had gone by. Now they introduce one every year, every single year, and the laws become more restrictive, more draconian. The Bill of Rights sink lower and lower down the hole at the bottom of the toilet. Once you have a population addicted to drugs and another population addicted to the money that they can obtain by selling those drugs, you have a method of control in place to regulate the fear of the middle class and be able to crank out legislation that destroys the liberty of the nation. And you have those people who are addicted both to the drugs and to the money enslaved. If you wish to create a crime wave in order to take the rights away from the people, you merely restrict the availability of the drugs and raise the price to an exorbitant level, so that those who are addicted must kill or rob or steal, plunder, loot, to obtain the money to buy what they cannot do without. You also have such levels of money involved that then other people become interested in stealing from the criminals who are buying and selling the drugs. And this creates murder waves in certain cities throughout the country. Dead bodies found all over the place. Once the draconian legislation is passed, in order to make it look like it's effective, you do two things. You flood the market with drugs, make the drugs so plentiful that anybody can get their hands on them anytime they want, and lower the price so that people do not have to go out and murder and rob and steal and loot in order to obtain what they cannot do without. When this happens, even the people who wanted to murder the drug dealers to get their money can afford to buy the drugs and sell them, and so they did. And the murders stopped for a time. And so the government drags out the figures and tells you that the crime bill works. In the truth, it didn't work at all. And if you look at the figures, ladies and gentlemen, you've been lied to for many years about the crime figures. Throughout history, what we now have is a nation with the largest prison population on this earth per capita. And most of the people who are in prison for victimless crimes. Crimes that, as little as 15 or 20 years ago, were not crimes at all. While they're in prison, they learn how to perform real crimes from real criminals. And now they're angry at society for having put them in there. When they get out, they put this newfound knowledge to work. And I know some of you are wringing your hands, but we can't let them do that. You can't let people smoke pot. Folks, I don't smoke pot, and I don't give a rat's you-know-what about pot or anything else. Don't care about it at all, but I'll tell you this. To put anybody in this world in jail because they sat down and smoked some pot, to me, is the crime. You see, because it infringes upon the very basic ideals and principles that this country was created to protect. And that is, as long as you're not hurting anybody else or anybody else's property, you can do pretty much what you damn well please. Well, you say pot leads to more addictive drugs. So what? Prohibition leads to organized crime. Prohibition leads to an underground market of whatever you prohibit. Prohibition leads to high prices on the contraband, which creates even more crime. And people are going to scratch whatever itches them. And that's the truth of the matter. Louis Farrakhan has set out an example for everybody. He has cleaned the drugs out of his neighborhoods without all of this other extraneous crap, and he's done it with the people in the neighborhoods. He has done away with the enslavement of drugs on his people. He has brought the families back together. He has put the black man in suits and ties, put him to work. He is taking care of his family. He is not selling drugs and he is not taking drugs in the neighborhoods where Louis Farrakhan's people live. And that's why these liberal socialist jerks hate Louis Farrakhan. Because he has kicked socialism out of the black neighborhood. He has said, we are not going to be enslaved. We are not going to be victims. We don't need Big Brother to take care of us. Get lost. If he were successful everywhere, people like Jesse Jackson and all the other leeches who thrive upon racial disharmony and encourage it would be out of a job, would be out of business, would be out of town, would be out of mind and sight and hearing. Remember when the Los Angeles riots took place? Louis Farrakhan forbade his people to take part in it. All the other black leaders were praising the looters and the rioters and the smashers and the burners and justifying why they should be doing it and why they shouldn't be telling them to stop it. That is why they don't like Louis Farrakhan. Now, I got to tell you, he says some pretty wacky things once in a while. He said some pretty wacky things today. And I'll talk about that in just a few minutes, ladies and gentlemen. Talk about some of the good things that were said. And talk about some of the wacky things that were said that don't even make sense. Not even to black people. Not to anybody. And I guess Louis Farrakhan thinks he's got the scope on Freemasonry. If I heard right, and if I am reading right from a transcript of his speech here, made by one of our people today, and faxed to me just moments before the broadcast, if I am reading this right, and if I heard what he said right, Mr. Louis Farrakhan is way off the mark on Freemasonry. He still doesn't understand it yet. And that's a shame, because he should. He should understand it. Because that's a big, big part of the history of black people in this country and other countries around the world. Don't go away, folks. I just might be back.
Marches for the marchers. Ladies and gentlemen, as always, this broadcast is brought to you by Swiss America Trading. And Swiss America Trading is always under attack for sponsoring this broadcast, and I got to tell you, other Patriot broadcasts also. It is a shame, I believe. Of course, I could be wrong, but I believe it's a shame that patriots don't support those who support them in the manner that our enemies support those who support them. You see, it is sort of an axiom, if you believe as we believe, that what goes around comes around. And that's certainly what we hope happens to those who have been, over the years, trying to destroy this country. They've taken away an awful lot. Now, if we believe that, if we believe that if we're right, we will prevail, and I'm telling you right now, a lot of people in this world were right who did not prevail. Jesus Christ was right, and he was still crucified. And to this day, he has not yet prevailed. Although, I hope that someday he does. So don't fool yourself into thinking that just because you're right, you're going to prevail. You have to take care of business. You have to support your people. You have to take care of those who take care of you. You have to take care of yourself. You have to take care of your family. I put this in my book somewhere. I forget where. I think it was the introduction or something. Some few pages that I wrote to introduce my book. It's been so long since I looked at my book, I don't remember where it's at. But basically, I said that I believe in God first. The Constitution for the United States of America second. My family third. Now, I'm going to tell you why. You see, if I didn't pay homage to my God, God might forget about me. He might not give me the blessings that I'm going to need to survive in this world. The reason the Constitution is number two is because it guarantees our liberties, our freedoms, and we have to take care of that document because it is the United States government, and that's where a lot of people get confused. They think Bill Clinton is the government. Or they think Washington, D.C. is the government. Or they think the United States of America is just a bunch of land surrounded by borders. And nothing could be further from the truth. The Constitution for the United States of America and the Bill of Rights is the government. It's what allows me to have a family. It's what allows me to take care of my family. It's what allows me to do whatever work I want to do in order to put food on the table and a roof over the head of my family. I have to take care of myself, or I cannot take care of my family. They'll be taking care of me. So you have to know how to put your priorities in the proper order. God, Constitution, myself, and then my family. That's the way it must be in order for me to take care of business. It has nothing to do with selfishness. Because I got to tell you, folks, I'm not a selfish man. I never have been and probably never will be, much to my misfortune. Swiss America Trading takes care of paying for the broadcast time of the hour of the time. A broadcast that many of you owe an awful lot to. A broadcast that has awakened, I don't know how many people, but I know it's an awful lot. A broadcast that has stuck a thorn clearly in the side of world socialism. A broadcast that has turned over the rocks and revealed the truth to the world. A broadcast where you have heard things discussed that you cannot and will not ever hear discussed anywhere else in this world, without exception. A broadcast that does not compromise, and a broadcaster that does not compromise, tells it like it is, no matter what. All of you know that you have to take care of your economic future. All of you know that. Many of you listen to this broadcast night after night after night and don't even listen to what I say about Swiss America Trading because you don't care. You don't care about your family. You don't care about your economic future. And you certainly don't care about Swiss America Trading. And if we were to go off the air tomorrow, you would complain and cry all over the place, never ever realizing that it was you that did it. Because the only thing that can cause this broadcast to go off the air will be lack of money to pay for the airtime. So let me tell you something. If you haven't taken care of business, if you don't own some real money, you need to do that. You don't have to get it all at once. You can get a little bit at a time, month by month, or every 2 months, or every 6 months, or whatever, but you have to do it. You have to do it if you really love yourself and your family, and if you really care about this country. You can't fight if you're in a ditch. You can't protect your family if you have nothing to protect them with. You can't feed them if you don't have any money. And when the buffalo chip hits the fan, folks, that stuff you're carrying around in your pocket right now isn't going to be worth spit on the wall. So when you finally come to your senses and decide to do something, or if you haven't completed the transactions that you need to complete, don't go somewhere else. And not just because of the hour of the time, but because you need to get back the honor that this country has lost. And part of being an honorable man is paying your debts. You owe Swiss America Trading for this broadcast. You owe them 3 years worth. Now sit down and think about that. And when you do, and when you're fishing around deciding where you're going to buy your real money, go to Swiss America Trading and thank them for their sacrifice. And believe me, they have sacrificed, ladies and gentlemen. You see, if they didn't bother with these broadcasts, they'd be making a hell of a lot more money. They have lost a customer base of a large segment of the nation. who do not believe as we believe. And who will trade in their phony baloney paper crap right down to the last minute, even while they're realizing what has happened, they still won't acknowledge it. So call 1-800-289-2646 and take care of business. Many of you haven't done that. You keep thinking, well, we've got another year. Well, it can't possibly happen here. Oh, Cooper can't be right. I don't have to be right on this one, folks. I don't have to be right at all. I don't have to know anything at all. Anybody with half a brain can figure this one out. If you look back through history, you'll see that no paper economy has ever succeeded in the history of the world. And no economy based upon hard commodity assets has ever failed. 1-800-289-2646. Do it now. You'll be glad that you did. Look around at the faces of your loved ones. If you can't tell them and assure them and show them right now that you've taken care of business, that you've put at least a part of your assets in real, hard money, then you must make the call. If you don't, you don't love them. It's as simple as that. You're lying to yourself and you're lying to them. 1-800-289-2646. Do it now, folks. You know, I think it's incredible that during the march today, Louis Farrakhan talked all around the subject, but he never quite hit it. And I talked to some people today who really thought that he had, but he didn't. I mean, this is a joke, really. He sort of skirts around pretending like he understands the symbolism and the truth behind the lodge. And it's clear that he doesn't understand it all. He says, and I quote, "There in the middle of this mall is the Washington Monument, 555 feet high. But if we put a 1 in front of that 555 feet, we get 1,555, the year that our first fathers landed on the shores of Jamestown, Virginia, as slaves. In the background is the Jefferson and Lincoln Memorials. Each one of these monuments is 19 feet high. Abraham Lincoln, the 16th president, Thomas Jefferson, the 3rd president, and 16 and 3 make 19 again." Now that's gibberish, folks. That is absolute gibberish. What is so deep about this number 19? Why are we standing on the Capitol steps today? That number 19, when you have a 9, you have a womb that is pregnant. And when you have a 1 standing beside the 9, it means that there is something secret that has to be unfolded. Total, absolute bullshit. I'm sorry, Mr. Farrakhan, but you've missed the mark. You are speaking gibberish to a crowd who didn't understand what you were talking about, and so didn't know that you were speaking gibberish, and maybe that's a good thing. But I know it, and you know it. I don't know why you're trying to pull off such a scam like that, but you shouldn't do it, unless you're one of them trying to confuse the issue, and I don't think you are. He says, "Well, the day that these presidents feared has now come to pass, for on this mall here we stand in the capital of America, and the layout of this great city, laid out by a black man, Benjamin Banneker, this is all placed and based in a secret Masonic ritual. And at the core of the secret of that ritual is the black man. He has deluded himself. The Masonic ritual did not originate anywhere with black men. He has fooled himself because white men have taken ancient religious symbols, some of whom belonged to black men way back then, and have completely changed the meaning and the symbolism and the religion, and he does not understand that these same men have used those secret symbols and that secret religion to enslave the black man throughout his history. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is sad, that the man pretends to know something that he hasn't got the slightest idea about. And to say that the Capitol was laid out by a black man, based in a secret Masonic ritual, which at the time the Capitol was laid out, no black man was ever privy to or allowed into to witness, is absolute fantasy. Then he touches on the truth. Not far from here is the White House. And the first president of this land, George Washington, who was a grand master of the Masonic order, laid the foundation, the cornerstone of this Capitol building where we stand. George was a slave owner. Now the president spoke today and he wanted to heal the great divide. But I respectfully suggest to the president, you did not dig deep enough at the malady that divides black and white in order to effect a solution to the problem. And so today we have to deal with the root so that perhaps a healing can take place. Now this obelisk at the Washington Monument is Egyptian, and this whole layout is reminiscent of our great historic past, Egypt. And if you look at the original seal of the United States published by the Department of State in 1909, Gaylord Hunt wrote that the late in the afternoon of July 4, 1776, the Continental Congress resolved that Dr. Benjamin Franklin, Mr. John Adams, and Mr. Thomas Jefferson be a committee to prepare a device for a seal of the United States of America. In the design proposed by the first committee, the face of the seal was a coat of arms measured in 6 quarters. That number is significant. 6 quarters with emblems representing England, Scotland, Ireland, France, Germany, and Holland, the countries from which the new nation had been peopled. And 6 is also the number, ladies and gentlemen, of man. And after man, 6 has gone through the 3 degrees and 6 acts. The number 18 is significant of the illumined man. The Eye of Providence in a radiant triangle and the motto, E Pluribus Unum. By the way, what I just told you was mine, and I'm continuing now with Farrakhan's. The Eye of Providence in a radiant triangle and the motto, E Pluribus Unum, were also proposed for the face of the seal. Even though the country was populated by so-called Indians and black slaves were brought to build the country, the official seal of the country was never designed to reflect our presence, only that of the European immigrants. The seal and the Constitution reflect the thinking of the Founding Fathers that this was to be a nation by white people and for white people. Native Americans, blacks, and all other non-white people were to be the burden bearers for the real citizens of this nation. And there he hits the nail right on the head. That is exactly the truth. And he continues, for the back of the seal, the committee suggested a picture of Pharaoh sitting in an open chariot with a crown on his head and a sword in his hand, passing through the divided waters of the Red Sea in pursuit of the Israelites. And hovering over the sea was to be shown a pillar of fire in a cloud, expressive of the divine presence and command. And raised from this pillar of fire were to be shown beaming down on Moses, standing on the shore, extending his hand over the sea, causing it to overwhelm Pharaoh. The motto for the reverse was, quote, rebellion to tyrants is obedience to God, end quote. Let me say it again, rebellion to tyrants is obedience to God. Now, why did they mention Pharaoh? I heard the president say today, E pluribus unum, out of many one. But in the past, out of many comes one, meant out of many Europeans comes one people. And there he misses the mark again. That is not at all what it was to me.
The question today is, out of the many Asians, the many Arabs, the many Native Americans, the many blacks, the many people of color who populate this country, do you mean for them to be made into the one? If so, truth has to be spoken to justice. We can't cover things up, cover them over, give it a pretty sound to make people feel good. We have to go to the roof, to the root of the problem. And there he is right again. You see, he mixes this stuff up. Pretending to understand the symbology of it all, and he doesn't. But he understands the end result of it all. No, it wasn't to mix them all up and make them one. It's always been, folks, in the center of the mysteries of the lodge, is that the white race is the superior race. The white Anglo-Aryan races, as they call them, are the superior race. All other races are inferior in their evolution and must be shepherded by the white race, who are the builders of the evolutionary future of humankind. E pluribus unum is out of many one, which means out of all of the different nations and religions and peoples of the world will ultimately come one utopian socialist world government, with the white race ruling and all of the other peoples filling in the slot that this race determines is where they are on the evolutionary scale of their development. And they're to be helped along by this shepherd race, as they call themselves, in their development. It's all bullshit. But so is all this stuff that Farrakhan is spouting. Bullshit equally as well. He understands the problem of his people. He understands where they've been, and he understands where they're at now. But when he attempts to say that he understands all of these other things, he's making a big mistake. Unless he is one of them. I happen to know for a fact that Jesse Jackson is a Freemason. I happen to know for a fact that every black man in a leadership capacity today in America, in political and public life, is a Freemason. There is no evidence that Louis Farrakhan is a Freemason. None whatsoever. Why do the blacks buy into this stuff? Folks, it's beyond me. I couldn't tell you in a million years. I don't know. I do know this, that despite his shortcomings, Louis Farrakhan is the best black leader that the black man has in America today. He is wrong when he says that all Jews are bad. He is wrong when he says that all whites are bad. He is right when he professes that there is a segment of the world that believes that the white race is the superior race and all other races are inferior. And he is right when he says that it is wrong. He has cleaned up the black neighborhoods. He has brought the black families back together. He has made the black man responsible wherever he has had a degree of control over those black men. He has brought them morals. He has brought them work. He has brought them businesses. He has brought them respect. He has given them back what those who would enslave the world would take away. Not just from the black man, but from most of us. You see, even if you're white, there are only a few leadership positions, ladies and gentlemen. The rest of the population is going to be relegated to the same sort of euphemistic slavery that the black man is going through today.
So in a nutshell, the million-man march on Washington was successful. I don't know if they got a million people or not. It sure looked to me like there was a million people there. Farrakhan's people say that there were 1,000,002. That's 1,200,000. The Park Police say that there were less than what Dr. Martin Luther King brought to Washington in 1963, which is less than 400,000. What are the real figures? No one will ever know, but I'll tell you that whatever the Park Police say, you can double it and be pretty close to the mark. I can guarantee you, ladies and gentlemen, based upon just the official figures, which are always lower than the reality of 1963, and comparing the crowds and the videotapes, that there were more people in Washington, D.C. today than there were in 1963 to hear the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. This is something that we had better all understand. The troubles of this world are not brought about by the white race, or the black race, or the Jewish race, or the Asian race, or the American Indians, or the Pygmies in Africa, or anybody else like that. It is brought about by a secret religion practiced behind closed doors in lodges without windows, by a brotherhood of men who exist the world over, who owe no allegiance to any country or to any religion save their own. I have proven it by reading these things, these quotes, in their own words, for many, many hours on this broadcast, specifically during the series that we call The Mysteries, or the Mystery Babylon series. This brotherhood is made up of many different races and many different men pretending to belong to many different religions who really belong only to one. And even those of different races other than the one that calls itself the master race have bought into this scam. And these people are trying to bring together a one-world totalitarian socialist government under the United Nations. They want 100% total control over every human being from the moment of birth until the moment of death. And they will not rest until they get it. Most white people don't have anything to do with it. Most black people don't have anything to do with it. Most Jews don't have anything to do with it. Most Asians don't have anything to do with it. Indeed, most of these people don't even understand anything about it. Racism is the greatest plague upon the human race. It is the method that is the easiest for our enemies to use against us to divide and conquer. And believe me, they do it well. Good night, and God bless you all.